Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by The Life of A. I'm your host, Stel, and my three co-hosts this evening. I've got two regulars here, Yannickis and Rodri Giggs. And joining us as our third, or my third co-host, is Harry Simu from the wonderful podcast, Sofa Sports News, and The Chronicles of Aguna. We can't forget that great podcast, can we? Yann, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. You all right?
Very good, very good. You seem a bit more upbeat than you were 10 minutes ago, but we're not going to go into that yet because we've got other games to review, not just United. Rod, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. I'm good.
Excellent. And unfortunately, we can't see your pretty face tonight, so it's just going to be through the joys of 4G.
Yeah, unfortunately for the viewers, but, you know, it'll be up and running next week.
Excellent, excellent. I think I'm just going to put this phone on Do Not Disturb, just in case someone starts phoning me. Harry, welcome back to the show, mate. How's it going?
Not too bad, man. Thanks for having me. Always glad to come on.
Now, it's always great to have you on, mate. Tell me about what you've been doing tonight, because you did another podcast earlier, didn't you?
Yes, literally finished about 15 minutes ago. We recorded the Sofa Sports podcast for this week with Keith Hackett. So plenty of debate around VAR, especially after the Premier League clubs decided not to take it on. So, yeah, plenty of debate. Keith is a massive, massive advocate of it. Dan DeLuca, as you all know, one of our regulars, is very anti-VAR. So it was extremely interesting.
Me, Dan, isn't it?
Dan is a bit like you.
Yeah, he's anti-VAR.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought you were just like saying that Dan is a funny guy and you're not a funny guy.
Anyway.
I'm not here to be funny. All right, let's talk about the Premier League. And Man City were crowned champions on Sunday after rivals United suffered a shock defeat at home to bottom club West Brom. No one really expected that apart from you, because you're not happy with the way things are. Now, City could have actually sealed the title last week by beating United, but got over their Champions League exit by demolishing Spurs at Wembley. Mate, it was, how can I put it, a very uncharacteristic Spurs performance, but if you, let's be honest, you take nothing away from Man City. Mm. They could have been five up at half-time, which could have been the same against United, really.
Yep.
I'm not actually sure how it was 2-1 at the break.
No, I don't either, to be honest. You have to give City a lot of credit, especially for the recent results and going out the Champions League twice to Liverpool getting beat and the derby being 2-0 up. They could have sealed it then. They showed a bit of character. They showed cojones, as Deeney says, to go away to Tottenham, which is not the easiest place to go. And to go and play football like that and to be fair, demolish Tottenham that the way that they did was very, very impressive. I thought Guardiola got his tactics spot on. Tottenham disappointed in a sense of they didn't impress City at all, which I was very surprised. It looked to me that they sat a lot, they sat back a lot and invited a lot of the pressure, where, as you know recently, the best way to kind of get at City is to press them high up on the pitch. So I was quite surprised about that. And Tottenham's big players, Kane didn't really turn up. He was non-existent. And when your big players don't perform in games like that, there's only going to be one winner. And City, you know, if it was 5-6, it wouldn't have flattered City, to be fair.
Harry, are you surprised with how quiet Dele Alli and Eriksen were? They didn't seem to have the best of games. I know Eriksen got on the score sheet, but it was a big deflection, wasn't it? Very fortuitous.
I'm an Arsenal fan, as you know, so I never like to see Spurs do well. But I was disappointed with the way they turned up on the weekend. I expected a lot more from them at Wembley. And I thought that, you know, having had such a poor run of results, like Jan's just said, that City were in for a tough time there. But they went there, and credit to them, absolutely played them off the park. And like you guys have said, it could have been more. And you know what? I know they won the title without actually playing, but that was a great performance to at least finish off with before the title eventually ended up with them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And Rod, Raheem Sterling, he was in fine form, making up for his sitters against United. The England international has 17 goals this season, which is 10 more than last. How much do you think Sterling has improved under Guardiola? Has it been a massive improvement?
It has, because the stats speak for themselves. But, you know, you've got to give credit to Raheem Sterling as well. We say that Pep's a big influence in, but, you know, the lad's done well as well. The amount of chances he's getting, and you know, he's still a young lad. You can definitely see he's a better player than last. He's a better player than last year, and he's definitely getting better. And obviously, the assist and the goals show that.
I think he's improved a lot. I really do. Looks up. When he gets the ball now, he looks dynamic. He looks dangerous. He wasn't that last season. I think Guardiola's given him a lot of confidence, and the fact that he starts him in a lot of games as well shows that the faith that he's got in him as well. Especially he's bought Bernardo Silva for all that money, but he still plays Sterling ahead of him. And I think was it 17 league goals he's got this season. Speaks volumes. I've never rated him as such, but he's dangerous this season.
That's right. Now,
he's missing a lot of chances, but I'd be worried if he's not getting chances. You know, he's going to keep missing chances, but he's going to learn from them, and eventually them chances will become goals, and that'll obviously be put him up another level. I think he's still got another level to go from this year, so he's only going to get better, Raheem Sterling.
That's right, and that'll surely benefit the England national team, especially this summer when they need that kind of dynamism, as you said. Now, City's title triumph was confirmed on Sunday thanks to West Brom's unlikely or likely, which way you want to see it, win against United, that Old Trafford. Now, I've got a Mickey Mouse mug, and that represents practically Man United at the moment, Mickey Mouse Club. Now, Rod, before we lay into United, let's give a lot of credit to West Brom, mate. I mean, they may have got men behind the ball, but they caused us a lot of problems, us being United. I think I'm doing Viva Red Army here. It wasn't a one-sided affair, though, was it? They were well worth the win, weren't they?
The way they started, you can see that there was starts on the front foot. It started very well. Rodriguez was a massive influence in the team. He worked hard the whole game. Deservedly got his goal. But yeah, from the result on Sunday, you just expect Manchester United to West Brom at home, to bottom of the league, won three games all season. I know the manager's just changed, but you still expect them to go at least put a better account of themselves than they did. It was just a poor performance and just a bit of a damp squid from last week. And last week really was just pointless because, you know, they ended up handing Manchester City the title. Oh, no, it didn't happen, and they didn't beat us, and they didn't win it on their own patch. But, you know, it's just as bad as just getting beat at home by West Brom.
That's right. Now, mate, Darren Moore, he's now got 4 points out of a possible six. I think he's won just as many games as Alan Pardew won in his time at West Brom, which isn't really saying much, to be fair. But let's be honest, it's a superb start for him, given the circumstances. Now, to be fair, giving him the role full-time in the Championship won't be the worst idea in the world, would it? I mean, if you look at their recent appointments as kind of like a baseline, yeah. I think giving him the job full-time, they can't really go wrong, can they?
No, they can't. I think they will give him the job. The fact that what he's done already in these two games, and it seems like the players have got a lot of respect for him as well, which is important. He's an ex-West Brom player as well, where the fans like him. I agree. I think he will get the job, and I think he will do well, to be honest. You've got to give him credit for what he's done, you know? So go to Old Trafford and set them up. And they weren't defensive, West Brom. They tried to play United on the counter. It's not like they had... Excuse me, it's not like they had the 10 men behind the ball and they thought, you know, we'll just defend for the whole game. When they had the opportunity, they had McLean bombing forward, they had Brunt going forward, Phillips on the right hand side, Rodriguez. They played two up front, which a lot of teams don't really do that. They had Rodriguez and Rondon up front. So his bravery there was to go with two up front at Old Trafford as well. You know, things like that they don't get noticed as much. It's all, United lost that home to West Brom, but yeah, United should win the game. But the credit wasn't given as much to West Brom as they should have. I thought they were phenomenal on the day.
The thing is, I think West Brom will be very, very unfortunate this season in the sense that they haven't been able to have Rodriguez and Rondon play up front as a two. Now, we said it weeks ago, where were the goals going to come from?
That's right.
Now, those two, they complement each other very well because Rondon is very physical. He holds the ball up well. He's not going to get bullied. I've never seen him bullied off the ball. He creates as well. And he's a nuisance. Whereas Rodriguez, We've seen what he's capable
Technically, he's a good player.
We've seen what he's capable of. He scored goals for every team he's played for.
That's right.
Southampton, Burnley. He isn't a pushover. And I'm not just like papering things over and saying, you know, West Brom are this phenomenal team. You know, it shouldn't be a surprise that United lost. But at the same time, I'm going to give credit where it's due because, as you said, it's very rare that clubs at that point of the season, at that position in the league, would come to Old Trafford and play United at their own game.
The only thing I'd say is the fact that everyone knows West Brom are going to get relegated. Maybe their attitude's a little bit different. It's like, let's go and have a go. We've got nothing to lose, etc.
Listen, but your attitude would be different if you've gone from Alan Pardew to a different manager that believes in you.
The shackles are off at West Brom, though, isn't it? They know what's going on, and it's just they're playing with freedom. And it shows sometimes in football or in an industry, when you play with freedom or confidence, you can achieve what you're achieving. And as for United, dire complacency, attitude, wrong tactics, players' minds possibly on the semi-final, hangover from last week. I don't know.
Listen, they've had a week to sort their lives out. But Harry, I'm going to pass this over to you, mate, because I personally believe that, you know, United's players and manager deserve all the criticism they get. I mean, let's be 100% honest. I can't think of any outfield player who's actually exempt from any criticism after that shite performance.
Completely agree. And you know what? People will say that, you know, nobody could catch City this season. And to an extent, I agree, City were fantastic. But United, for me, didn't actually put up that much of a title challenge. I think they've been weak all season. They've been boring, horrible to watch. And I'm saying it as an Arsenal supporter, somebody who, you know, I've never had the greatest love for Manchester United, but I've always respected the way they played football. I always knew that, you know, playing Manchester United was the biggest game of the season for us. I always knew that Manchester United were exciting and fun to watch, and you were always going to see goals. Whereas now, to be honest with you, I've got no interest in watching Manchester United a lot of the time. I think Mourinho's just sucked the life, what little life there was after Moyes and Van Gaal and all that. I think he's just killed them off completely. The way he criticises his players in public, I'm not so sure it's the right thing to do. I feel as though by doing that, he's deflecting from the fact that he's got a lot of things wrong. He has spent an awful lot of money. You know, people always go on about how much City have spent, and I'm not saying United spent as much, but they all did spend a massive amount of money. And in my opinion, he's wasted most of it. So, you know what? He's brought Alexis Sanchez in there. He's not getting the best out of him. Paul Pogba is not getting the best out of him either, apart from the odd flash that we see here and there, like at the City game a couple of weeks ago. But for me, Mourinho is the problem. And I don't think United will compete with Guardiola until Mourinho's gone. And I think this was just another example of the dire, boring football that we've seen pretty much all season. And just because they're second, you know, that doesn't pull the wool over my eyes. I don't think that Manchester United were ever in this title race apart from maybe 4 or 5 weeks into the season.
Right, I know you have got a lot to say, right? And I'm going to give you the floor, okay? I'm going to give you 2 minutes. I'm going to give you 2 minutes, right, to get everything off your chest, okay? Starting from now.
I just agree with Harry, to be honest, and he's not even a United fan. I just think the way that we play, the negativity around the club, even Mourinho's interviews, he's not upbeat, he's always miserable. That reflects onto the players, that reflects onto the club, it reflects onto us fans. Sunday, you and I used to go United all the time. You can hear a pin drop at Old Trafford. 77,000
stop
people.
Right there, Leeds United in the FA Cup. Carry on. It's still your time.
But,
come on.
But that's what I mean. It's because of the way United play. They don't excite the fans. So the fans are just going there, sitting there going, are we going to get excited in a minute? Are they going to play a decent pass in a minute? It's the expectancy now at United. This is what we're used to watching. And as Harry
we're
says,
spoiled.
We're
spoiled.
We are spoiled. On. But growing up watching United under Fergie and playing the way that we did and watching us now under Moyes, Van Gaal and Mourinho, it doesn't sit well with me. And I know, I mean, we had this heated debate before we came on the show about
1 minute, by the way,
about you know, the trophies he won last season. Let's not forget United finished sixth. We bought this manager in who's had a track record of winning titles, and United finished sixth. We're not Chelsea, not disrespecting them, anybody else. We're Man United. This season, as Harry says, where was the title fight? The title ended for us, what, September? This is supposed to be second season that he's going to get things right. Now, if he's going to have a third season, his signings have got to be top. The attacking flair United have, he needs to let them loose. He's got them. He's got
every, 20 seconds.
He's got every player, attacking player. No. Don't go that forward. Please come back. Stay there. We'll take a 0-0. If we nick a 1-0, we're happy.
10 seconds.
That's all I've got to say. I'm not happy at all.
You could have just said that and saved all that hassle.
I just wanted to waste the 2 minutes.
Still, can I just say, the worrying thing, if I was a United fan, what I'd be concerned about is Alexis Sanchez's form. Because I'm someone who's been and watched Alexis Sanchez for a few years now, week in, week out, and he is a fantastic player. Up and down, energetic, skillful, direct, gets his head down and goes for his opponent, beats the fullbacks. I've not seen none of that since he's joined United. And, you know, Alexis Sanchez didn't become a bad player overnight. All I can think of is that he's playing a style of football that he's not enjoying, and he's got a manager there who doesn't know how to get the best out of him, isn't giving him the freedom that, say, Arsene Wenger would have given him.
But that's the thing, Harry. You just hit like the nail on the head. It's the fact that United are so defensive, where there's like 10, 11 men behind the ball when they play United, and there's only maybe Lukaku and maybe one other member there. Who's he going to pass to? He's not going to find the guys. Where you had that Arsenal, where you had maybe Ramsey bombing forward and players from midfield bombing forward and playing a certain way, he got more of the ball and he looked more influential. I actually think Alexis, to be fair to him, the last 3-4 games, he looked a lot better in a United shirt. It's just the fact that the whole team was so dire on Sunday that everybody took the criticism.
Listen, I'm going to tell you this like I keep saying to myself, I keep saying to other people, right? And, you know, Rod may disagree with me, may agree with me, but the reason why I honestly believe why Mourinho doesn't let the shackles off and let these players express themselves in an attacking point of view is because he does not trust that back line. He hasn't got a back four they can say, right, I trust every single one of you. Once he has that back line sorted, you're going to see completely different United, right? I'm happy to, like I told you, I'm happy to write off this season because he had such a good season in his first one, right? The objective was Champions League football. Okay, as you said, he got through the back door. He still got it, right? He's the first Man United manager to win trophies in his first season, right? And we've seen progress in the league. I know Harry says that United haven't competed, which is true, but since Ferguson retired, no other United manager has got United in the top three. We're seeing progress, okay? We need to get out of this ridiculous rhetoric that, oh, it's the United way. You've got to play a certain way. You don't have to. Rod will tell you, Sexton wasn't great, was he, Rod? You know, Atkinson wasn't great all the time, was he? So even Ferguson at the beginning wasn't great. Ask Mal Donaghy, right? So all I'm saying is, right, we don't give managers time these days, okay? Granted, Mourinho's football hasn't been superb, but people weren't complaining when we were banging four past Swansea City. They weren't complaining when we were banging four past this one, past that one. What do you want? You can't win every single game. All I'm saying is, right, if you want him out now, tough shit, because he ain't going out now. He's going to go either next season or the season after. So you know what? Just with Van Gaal, grin and bear it. Stop being a bitch. Take it, because there are teams out there that have been suffering worse than United. Just deal with it. Rod?
Yeah, I agree some of it. Yeah, you know, United fans will put up with it if we're winning. But at the minute, we're not winning, so it just becomes more of a weight around his shoulders, because they're just the dire football that he plays. And I understand what you're saying, that, you know, that at the start of the season, he was winning 4-0, but, you know, against Swansea, it was 1-0, so it was 0-0 up to 75, 80 minutes, then we scored 3 late goals, and it was the same a couple other games.
But Rod, if you take City and Liverpool's outstanding attacking football out of the equation, no one would be saying anything, would they? But it's because it's kind of a combination of both.
I know what you're saying, but Liverpool's defensive is shocking, but that didn't stop Klopp having arguably the best attack in the league. Same with Guardiola, he's got the same problems. all right, Otamendi's had a good season and company come good in the end. But their defensive is the weak link. You know, Liverpool showed that. So that's not Mourinho's way. It never has. That's why it was the wrong appointment at the first in the first place. But he's here now. He's better than what we had. We've come sixth. We've won two league. We've won two cups. Second league, second season. He's come second. So like you say, he's progressing. If the week, I mean, next year we win, then people put up it. If we don't, and we come second or third, then it'll be looking like the trapdoor's going to be open for him and people are pushing him out. Because if he's not winning, people won't put this much longer the way he's playing because it's absolute dire.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's just finish that.
One last thing. You said there about the back line, about him not trusting the back line, but didn't he go out and buy Eric Bailly? Didn't he go out and buy Lindelof? So he's bought two centre-halves that he doesn't trust. So that's he's got to be accountable for that.
He bought Eric Bailly, who's been injured for like 4 months this season. He had an outstanding season last season. He was probably our best defender. And he brought in Lindelof, who... Let's be honest. I mean, it's a questionable fee for a start, but the guy needs time to settle. I'm all for giving players time to settle, because when you look at the likes of, say, Gareth Bale, for example, at Spurs, he needed two or three seasons before he did anything, and then he became one of the best players in the world. This is what I'm saying. Like, people don't give players time. Like, Arsenal plays to throw it back at you, but Granit Xhaka's been getting pelters, but I think he's a fantastic footballer. As a footballing brain, I think he's fantastic, but maybe he's not utilised properly. People ain't giving him a chance, but... You know, yeah, he Mourinho brought in Bailly and Lindelof, but when you look at all the other crap he's got, Damian, Blin, Shaw, Valencia, right back, Smalling, Jones. You tell me any of those players that you take at Arsenal?
No, none of them. But I just think, you know, this is a manager who spent nearly 70 million on two centre halves, but then doesn't trust his centre halves, and for me, that's a problem. That's a mistake that Jose Mourinho needs to hold his hands up for. And you shouldn't hide behind saying that he's worried about his back line when he had the chance to go out and rectify that. And he bought... I'm not blaming him for Bailly so much because I think he's a decent player. He's just been unfortunate with injuries. But Eric Lindelof is a dud, in my opinion. And so he's gone out and spent that money, and he could have...
Well, that's a good point, but I honestly believe the guy needs time. He needs something. We've seen him at international level how good he is, but he just can't replicate his leave form, which is bizarre. It really is. But again, I think that he needs a full season in the Premier League just so that he can, you know, get used to the way things are. And in Lindelof's defence, I mean, how many different defensive partnerships has he had? He's had Bailly, he's had Smalling, he's had Rojo, he's had Jones. I mean, there's four different central defenders. You can't expect the guy to settle. And yeah, you can blame the manager again, but do you blame the injuries to Rojo? Do you blame the injuries to Bailly? Do you blame the shitness of Jones and Smalling? I don't know. This is what I'm saying. If he goes out and spends £100 million on two defenders and gets players that he believes that he wants, then there's no more excuses. But right now, it's still not Jose Mourinho's squad, because I don't think Jose Mourinho wants a Blin, a Damian, a Shaw, a Young, a Herrera, a Carrick. A lot of these players.
They missed a massive opportunity by not getting Van Dijk. He's by far the best centre half in the league. I don't know how they didn't get him. It was just, you know, he's going to be a massive player for Liverpool.
He was tapped up though. He was tapped up from a while ago, wasn't he, Rod?
Yeah, he was tapped up, but so was Sanchez, and we got him.
There's
ways around that. You pay the money. I'm sure if Manchester United coming from a local, then he's got a decision to make.
Mm.
I'm hoping for him. Sorry, Rod, go on.
No, you can see that he's a top defender, and he's made defenders around him even better, and that's what top players do.
All right, let's move on from United, because it's getting a bit boring now, and people are going to start turning off the podcast. Right, let's talk about the relegation battle. It got even more interesting when Tom Ince bagged their 91st minute winner for Huddersfield against Iron Apercrew Watford. Jan, this was Huddersfield's only real chance, and what a big goal that could be when you think about it. I mean, listen, the problem is, while the Terriers are 7 points off the drop zone, they face Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea in the last three games. They're not safe yet, are they?
They're not safe considering that the games that they've got. But I just think that the teams below them are just as bad, so they will just about stay up. But what a massive goal that was, isn't it? That was just, that was like winning a title itself. That was, you can tell, like, from the whole, the way Huddersfield celebrated that goal, it was like they won the league title. But listen, you've got to give them credit as well. No one thought Huddersfield would be in this position at this latter stage of the season. You know, I wrote them off start of the season, probably with Brighton and, you know, Newcastle, teams like that. And to find these clubs where they are in the league is a credit to them and their managers and the players. And they've done fantastically well. I think West Brom are going to go, as you know. Stoke will probably go. And I think even Southampton, I think the three that are there will probably go down. So the rest will be just about okay.
Good. Positivity. I like this. Rod, Tom Ince was one of those wonder kids. You know, you wanted to buy on Football Manager and, you know, a player touted as a future England winger as a youngster at Liverpool. Haven't we heard that so many times before? You know, why do you think he hasn't lived up to expectations? Is the name too much of a pressure point?
No, I shouldn't think so. You know, he's one of them players that promised much, but, you know, never got really settled. Was here, was there, was everywhere. Dad was telling him about it. He was going into Milan, he was going here. And now he's got settled. Now we might see the best of him, but, you know, I think he's one of them players for me, watching him at the Championship play. He's a very good player, but, you know, when you step up to the Premier League, he just becomes, you know, an okay player, but, you know, he's still young. He's got a great left foot, and he's got some pace. He can go either way. You know, like you say, it was a massive goal for this field, a massive goal, because that'll probably just keep him safe now.
Mm-hmm. Harry, what do you make of Huddersfield's debut season in the Premier League? They haven't really done themselves too much injustice, have they? They haven't embarrassed themselves.
No, they haven't. To be fair to them, you know, when you look at, if you had said to them at the beginning of the season that they'd be in this position now, they probably would have taken it, because a lot of people wrote them off. I think they started the season really well. They've sort of quietened down a little bit. And you know what? It's a long old slog in the Premier League, and you just hope that they will do enough to stay up. I like success stories like that. I like seeing the so-called smaller clubs on the lower budgets doing well, and credit where it's due. You know, that they've been fantastic, and that, like you said, they haven't embarrassed themselves, and even if they are to go down, they still won't have embarrassed themselves. So fair play to Huddersfield. Well, I actually want them to go down, but fair play to them.
So you won't be buying the end of season DVD then?
No chance.
Right, Wilf Zaha, who else was in fine form for Crystal Palace as he grabbed a brace against deadly rivals Brighton in a 3-2 win. That rivalry is bizarre, isn't it? Something to do with Mullery, I guess. Rod, Zaha, another player. He's been immense for Palace since making a return to the club. He isn't much of a wing anymore, is he?
No, I think he's grown with experience and with age and with maturity. And he's one of them players that you can play him left, right, number 10. You can even play him as a striker, but, you know, he's obviously their X factor, and they've obviously needed him, and he's probably going to be the difference to see him, to stay and keep him in the league. But yeah, he's obviously come up on leaps and bounds in the last couple of years, and yeah, he's that type of talent. He can play anywhere along that front three, and like I said, as a number nine as well.
He's a scary prospect, absolutely scary. Now
he is, and you know, it's a big opportunity now, because in the summers, you know, someone could come in for him, because he is a top six player. We've seen that one on one with anyone, he'll rip him to pieces, and his assists have become better as well. So, and he's obviously scoring goals. So I'm sure people like Tottenham, Chelsea, even Arsenal and Manchester United will be looking at him. But he's definitely come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of years.
Do you think he would have made it at United if it weren't for Moyes?
No, I think his attitude.
I don't think it was. I think it was one of them things where he was a young lad, and his face didn't fit. And it just didn't fit in.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame. He's got talent.
It is. He's a fantastic footballer. You know, loads of ability, bags of ability. Now, I actually believe Palace will stay up this season purely because of the fact that they score goals all over the pitch. I said it on Harry's podcast last week, Sober Sports News, which you can listen to on SoundCloud, iTunes and FNX Network, by the way.
Cheers for the plug.
See that? Now, the thing is, even James Tomkins got on the score sheet. Now, this player, he's another one that's really stepped up this season. At West Ham, he was kind of, you know, in and out of the team, kind of half-formed a partnership with Winston Reid, and James Collins was in and out as well. He's been a revelation for them this season, hasn't he? He's really grabbed the ball by the horns.
He stepped up when Palace are needed him most, especially when Sacco's been out as well. He's the one that's kind of held Palace to where they've been.
Danny's injured. He's done it again.
He's done it again. He's done really, really well. I'll tell you a player I like at Palace. Probably find it hard to pronounce. Milojevic.
The central midfielder.
He's a really good player, isn't he? He's a really... He scores goals. He creates goals. He takes a good penalty, apart from City in the last minute, but that's another story. But he stepped up as well. And like you said, Palace do get goals. They're a good side, Palace. Attacking-wise, they play decent football. And yeah, they'll stay up. And Hodgson deserves a little credit for that as well, from where they were start of the season. And we touched about this with Benteke not scoring goals and all the shenanigans around the club. For them to be, again, where they are, that's a massive credit to Hodgson again and the players.
And that's a big performance and a big result, because we've seen them concede goals in the last 5-10 minutes.
Well, they should have. Murray should have scored, shouldn't he? Mr. Sitter.
Exactly.
2 yards.
Exactly. But they deserve a bit of luck.
Yeah. The amount of 90th-minute goals or late goals they've conceded.
Exactly.
They needed that.
Exactly. Right. A brace from Oliver Giroud, the guy that's finally found his goal-scoring touch, I guess, to help Chelsea come back from 2-2 to beat Southampton 3-2 at St. Mary's. I'm going to pass this over to Harry. Now, we profiled Giroud in November, December time, and we spoke about the amount of goals, or crucial goals, he scored for Arsenal. Now, it looks like he's brought that leprechaun with him to Chelsea, because he's doing the same there. Two very well-taken goals, might I add.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of Olivier Giroud. I always have been, and I always felt that he got a lot of unfair criticism during his time at Arsenal. Look, Olivier Giroud came in with, and obviously eventually ended up replacing Robin van Persie. Now, there's no doubt he's not even half the footballer Robin van Persie is in terms of technical ability. But this is a player who comes off the bench and has immediate impact in games. He's physical. He has got a good touch. He scores a variation of goals, particularly, you know, headers, volleys, plays really well with his back to goal. And the thing with Olivier Giroud for me is that what he does is when he comes on the pitch, he immediately occupies the centre-halves. And one centre-half can't handle Olivier Giroud. He draws both of them in, such as his physicality, that he creates spaces for other players as well as scoring goals himself. And I think that's a really, really important element of his game that people don't really talk about.
Oh, I agree with you. I think he's a fantastic one-touch goal scorer. I've said this time and time again. It's almost as if once that ball leaves his foot, it's going to go in the back of the net if it's a first touch, really. What would you make of him at Chelsea? Because it wasn't going to be easy replacing, what's that fella that ended up in Madrid?
Costa.
Yeah, that guy who we seem to have forgotten about. Yeah. Obviously, there was that spat between him and Conte. And then had it not been for the Aubameyang, Batshuayi deal, Giroud probably wouldn't have been at Chelsea, you know. But he's had an okay start to his career at Chelsea. He hasn't really had that many opportunities, especially with Morata there. Mm. I think he'll come good, don't you?
Good player, Giroud. Mm. If I was Giroud, I'd be a little bit disappointed with the amount of starts he's had at Chelsea. He's not really started a lot of games. They've gone with Morata, maybe even Hazard up front, and left Giroud on the bench. It's a weird one with Giroud, because for me, Giroud's not one of them players that you look at the team sheet and you look at the opposition strikers go, Giroud's play. Oh, I'm scared today. But he always seems to do something in a game that influences. Yeah. As Harry says, he's for a big guy, his touch is quite good. He is a very good finisher. He's not got a lot of pace. And that's another quality about him that he deserves praise. He's not a player that in the last 15 minutes of a game that he's going to go in behind with his pace, because he's not a pacey player. Mm. So the fact that he gets goals late stages and he's not quick is a credit to him for that as well. And, you know, even France, Deschamps trusts him. He's his number one striker ahead of Benzema. Well, I know Benzema's greatest problem doesn't play there, but even so, he's still France's number one striker, and he's always scored goals. So he deserves another player that deserves credit.
Yeah, he's so dangerous.
I'm full of praises tonight, me, isn't it? Apart from United.
That's it. He's so dangerous at the front post as well. When crosses come in, he's always lurking at that front post. That run across the defender towards the front post. And he's got enough about him to divert things goalwards, even when he's sort of outside the width of the goal.
I mean, it's like what you said about his first time finishing, like his second goal. He could have possibly taken a touch and maybe curled it. Didn't. Never thought of that. As soon as he came in, hard volley or bottom corner, and fantastic finish. Keep by Nolcho.
Some of his goals look very clumsy, but he meant to do it. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Kind of like Hernandez. Right, Giroud's old club Arsenal could do with some luck away from home this season as they slump to another defeat on the road. They're fifth on the bounce. I never thought I'd hear myself say that about Arsenal losing five league games in a row in the league anyway, away from home. I remember that season when they went the whole season unbeaten. In fact, the whole season away from home unbeaten as well when Wiltord scored that winner at Old Trafford. Wenger questioned his side mentality, saying it's a lot about the head and sometimes there's no rationality in it. It makes no sense. Now, Harry, I know you've probably spoken at great length about Arsenal's terrible away record this season. I mean, they're yet to win a Premier League game away from home in 2018. I know Rod has spoken a lot about Arsenal's mentality or mental toughness or lack of it, shall I say. Mate, it just seems to me that the players have simply written off this season. What's your take on Arsenal's away form?
The away form's been abysmal. You know, we haven't got very many strong characters, if any at all, in that team. That's clear. You know, playing at home seems to be a comfort zone for them because our home record has been fantastic. I think we've only lost twice at home that I can remember, to Manchester City and Manchester United, in fact. So our home record's been brilliant. But away from home, it's just not gone well. There's been an issue there mentally from the very start of the season. It all started when we got thrashed up at Liverpool. The game before that, we got beat at Stoke as well. Perhaps unfortunate not to get a penalty that day when it was 0-0. So, you know, it's been right from the very beginning of the season. In terms of the mentality now, you know, I think everybody knows that Arsenal's priority now is the Europa League. And you guys as Manchester United fans will know exactly what that's like because you did the same thing last year. You know, we've put our eggs all in that basket. Shkodran Mustafi has been awful in the centre of defence. I've been really disappointed with him. And I know a lot of people say, you know, our team's not set up to defend and so on and so on, and try and deflect from the fact that Mustafi is making these errors. But these are unforgivable, stupid errors. And I think Sunday that was the case again. A ball come across and, you know, he looks so uncomfortable when he's asked to play on the left side of the defence. The ball come across and, you know, Koscielny there probably would have swung a boot at it. And if you don't get the ball, you're at least sort of blocking off the run of the forward. But it was as if he hesitates. He tries to go with his right foot, which is unnatural, and just gives that yard to the striker. And this kind of thing is happening far too often. Petr Cech's been a liability away from home most of the season. There are so many reasons. Like, we could do a whole show on Arsenal's away form, but, you know, those are just some of the things.
Yes, we feel your pain. It's some strange.
I seen a stat yesterday is that right, Harry, that Arsenal have got the worst away record since Christmas in the Football League?
Yeah, that's right. Yep, that's right.
Yeah, for a team like Arsenal, you know, that's just shocking.
There's me disgraceful. But they've got United coming up soon. There's their first win.
Sandwich in between the Europa League game. And the funny thing is, that's what happened with us and them last season.
Last season.
We had the semi-final sandwich in between. The game against Arsenal away, sandwich in between the semi-final of the Europa League. And they have an away trip to us, sandwich in between. Yeah, well, maybe we might get a
big... It's ironic.
I've decided I'm not going. I'm not going up to Old Trafford.
Arsenal 6.
Yeah.
When the United finished last season, 6, won the Europa. Yeah, could be the same moment.
The thing is, we didn't have Burnley breathing down our necks.
Yeah.
If Arsenal win the Europa League, then you can forgive them because, like Harry said, we put our eggs in the basket last year, and luck enough, we won it. But you know, if they don't win it, then it's just an eye look. Definitely be out on Arsenal, and you know, he needs to move on if he doesn't qualify for Champions League and don't win the Europa League.
Do you know what? I don't mean to sound disrespectful here, Harry, but if you beat Atletico, who could you play in the final?
Marseille or Salzburg.
Is that, which one? Oh, sorry, I think of Red Bull. It's Red Bull, Salzburg, Red Bull, Leipzig, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So it'll be Marseille. Yeah.
It's ironic, though, with the Europa, how people laughed at United last season, as in, oh, the club of United, you're going to win the Europa. But look at Arsenal. How important is that trophy to Arsenal football?
I don't think the majority of Arsenal fans actually want to win the Europa League.
What, because of Wenger?
Because they don't see it as a respectable trophy. They want to be in the Champions League.
Put it this way, at the start of the season, just like you guys last season, we weren't interested in the Euro. Well, we were this year because we were in it and not in the Champions League. But that's not your goal at the beginning of any season, to win the Europa League. But that's how things have turned out. If that's our only route back into the Champions League, then so be it. It is a European trophy. You're not going to see me standing on the rooftop shouting out, because I've said all season it hasn't excited me. The only game I was up for was the Milan game, and that's because it was against Milan and we were playing in the San Siro, the old romance thing about it. But, you know, this trophy is, like Jan said, is huge to Arsenal Football Club now, because if some of us do believe that Wenger will go at the end of the season, we want the new manager to come in with Arsenal being a Champions League club. We know what our board are like. We know how tight they are. And not being in the Champions League will give them the perfect excuse not to back us financially again. So there's that as well.
Makes sense.
It does.
Yeah, top sense. Right. Another big win for Rafa Benitez. One thing I forgot to add last week is, will he be at Newcastle next season? And to be fair, if another club with, say, more ambition coming for him, I can't see him staying. Can you?
Arsenal might be looking for a manager. Will they take Benitez?
I doubt it. I highly doubt it. Jardim is going to be the Arsenal manager. No. I'm taking this now.
Tuchel.
No. He's going Paris Saint-Germain, isn't he? Tuchel.
Is that where he's going?
Apparently. They're going to get Jardim, the Monaco man. Monaco, I'm telling you this now.
Another manager who can't defend.
Rod's going for Patrick Vieira.
Do you know what? You mentioned Patrick Vieira. Listen to my interview with Sean Wheelock, the former BBC MLS correspondent, who says that Patrick Vieira isn't ready for Arsenal. Anyway.
It's been like New York City.
Plugging all the way tonight, man. Yeah. Plugging the holes. Harry, Jardim, Benitez, which one?
I'll take Benitez. I don't think Benitez has done a bad job anywhere he's been, bar maybe Real Madrid. I can't think of a bad job that he's done. Yeah, I guess, but they weren't exactly sort of, you know, punching at the top of Serie A at that point. I don't
took after Mourinho.
Is that when he took over? I thought it was after that. I thought there was someone in between. My bad. But I like Benitez.
He did a David Moyes. He took the champions and made them.
Johnny Evans is available as well.
Stop it, Rod.
Tony Adams' new autobiography is out soon and we'll be reviewing that
soon.
Right, in other news, because he's going to turn into a fart, isn't it? Right. Wolves have been promoted to the Premier League with 4 games to spare, ending a 6-year exile from the top flight. Hardly a Lord Lucan thing because they're still alive. Nuno Espirito Santo's side have been top of the Championship since November, an incredible feat, given how difficult it is to get into the playoffs, let alone win it. Now, granted, Wolves have broken their transfer record 3 times in the last 2 seasons, but unlike other clubs, they've brought in quality players like Ivan Caballero, Helder Costa, and Ruben Neves, who has been absolutely sensational. He's been making the Portuguese national team playing for the Championship side. I mean, I can't remember the last Wolves player. Actually, I can. Steve Ball. To get into the national team, playing at Division 1.
Speaking of Neves, did you see his volley the other day?
Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
Ridiculous.
My goodness. But how do you think they'll do next season?
It depends if they get back in or not. They could, if...
What do you mean get back in? I just said they've just been promoted.
As in, if they spend money to stay up, I mean...
Oh, backing. Yeah. I thought you meant back in.
No, back in.
Caught me.
I'm Greek.
No. Back here.
You know... Could they do a Huddersfield and stay up? Will they have more resources? I mean, if they can break the transfer
record
in the Championship, then I'm sure they'll have a bit of dough for the Premiership, and the money they're going to get coming up as well. And with the manager as well, I'm sure he can attract players. I mean, he's been at Valencia, he's been at Porto, so he's been at clubs where, you know, he's managed that big league. So possibly if they get the right players with the right mentality, then why not? But the thing is, he needs a good start. Because as you know, in the Premiership, they've promoted him. he loses four on the bounce, before you know, he'll be sacked. So he need, as the manager, he needs a good start next season. And
Rod, Chinese billionaire owners, Jorge Mendes is a middleman. What could go wrong?
They've done fantastically well. They're great to watch, but can they transform that into the Premier League next year? West Brom, Wolves, sorry. Yeah, I'm sure they will. But like you say, if he doesn't start well, he'll be under pressure because they'll spend a few quid there. But you know, I'm sure they'll do well. They've got some fantastic players, and it's a nice place to play Wolves as well. They'll play them at pitches. It's a nice place and good fans. It's a good club.
Diego Jota's done well for them as well, hasn't he? He's scored a lot of goals this season.
17 league goals. Bonatini's got 12. I think Barry Douglas has got 14 assists, which is absolutely incredible for that league.
It'd be interesting to see if they carry on this philosophy and they carry on this attacking football next year. Because
I think he will, Rod.
Hopefully, because it served them well this year, and why not? Why wouldn't they?
Because he's played the same way at Valencia and he played the same way at Porto.
I think defensively, the Premier League is not as strong as it used to be, so yeah, why not?
Harry, do you have high hopes for Wolves next season? We've seen how other promoted clubs have done reasonably well since coming up. Do you give them a chance of staying up next season?
Yeah, because I don't think the first season is always the hardest. I think it's the second and third that tend to be a lot more difficult. I think the first season, you're playing from adrenaline. You're playing with that buzz of being in the Premier League. Often we see promoted sides get off to a decent start, big home crowds and so on and so forth. And so I expect them to do reasonably well. I think they'll stay in the league. And I think anything between sort of 10th and, you know, 15th is achievable, maybe even a little bit higher, depending on how the league goes. But with Wolves, it's a strange one because normally I enjoy watching teams blow other teams away and make their way towards promotion. But with Wolves, like you mentioned, because there's this billionaire behind it all, there's the Jorge Mendes link, it just doesn't feel authentic to me. I don't know, I've not really warmed to Wolves this time around. I don't know, it's just me.
So you're probably more into Fulham more than anything, right?
I can't say I've got any feelings towards any championship club, if I'm honest. You know what? I kind of want Millwall to sneak into the playoffs. I went down there a few weeks ago and got talking with Jordan Archer after the game as well. Really nice lad. And, you know, that it felt like I was going back into sort of the old days of football, and I really enjoyed my day there. So I hope they scrape into the playoffs. But other than that, I've not really got any favourites in the championship. And like I said, I think Wolves will do okay.
Well, we hope they do well for Steve Morrison, don't we?
That's right.
Another show. So he's done well this season, Morrison, as well. Played well.
Yep. Thank goodness.
He was immense that day when I was there. It was against Nottingham Forest. He was just winning everything in the air. And you know what? He's a striker, but my God, does he get about the pitch. And he's so pivotal to the way that team plays.
There you go.
Yep.
High praise indeed. Right, we have not done a no Vardy, no party for a few weeks. So here's one that will boil your blood. And I'll pick this one specifically because
I know you're going to talk about
it. You know, right. So I want you guys to picture the scene. Those of you listening that don't know this story, picture the scene. Referee blows for half time. Players trudge off towards the tunnel. The sprinklers come on. The referee then consults VAR, tells the players to come back on the pitch and awards a penalty to the home side. Now, this could be a pivotal moment in the Bundesliga relegation battle, as the penalty decision led to Mainz's first goal in a 2-0 win over Freiburg, which actually leapfrogs them into 15th and moves Freiburg into the relegation playoff spot. Beautiful. I love football, as Colin Moore said. Now, I know this has irked you somewhat, but you've got to see the funny side, surely. Come on.
Yeah, funny side as a neutral, not if you're a Freiburg fan. You know, I can imagine that. Fans are going to the toilet, having their pies, and it's like, what's going on down there? Oh, it's a penalty. VAR doesn't sit well with me. You know my feelings towards it. It is funny. I mean, but this is the controversy that with VAR. No wonder so many clubs in the Premiership don't want it. It spoils football. And, you know, we're not going to go into the whole VAR situation again. But this is one example of many examples that we've seen this season that, for me, it doesn't work in football. Yeah, you can get a decision right, etc. But football's an emotional sport, you know. VAR doesn't sit well with me, as you know.
Harry, I've always believed that VAR can work if it's utilised correctly. Now, on your podcast, Over Sports News, which is available on SoundCloud, iTunes and FNX Network, did you discuss VAR tonight?
We did. We discussed it at length. I think we spent a good half an hour on it, to be honest. It was Keith Hackett's passion about it just comes through. We didn't actually speak about that example, but because we got so engulfed in the debate that we ended up just moving on from it. But that example that you're referring to in the Bundesliga, you know, I think it's easy to laugh at it. It's easy to point at it and say that's ridiculous and so on. But it was a penalty, wasn't it? It was the right call. So, you know, in the interest of fairness, it was a penalty. And I actually rate the referee for having the balls to do that. And you know what? If you were Mainz and you went down as a result of not getting that penalty, you'd be devastated. So I think, look, it can be used better. We need to implement it properly. I think the problem that we've got here is where the Premier League have rejected it for this year, and this was something that Keith was saying as well, not only are we, you know, going to still have these poor decisions week in, week out, but we're just deferring the inevitable, because VAR is going to come in. And when it does come in the Premier League, Serie A would have settled down with it. La Liga would have settled down with it. The Bundesliga would have settled down, and we'll still be in the learning phase. So it feels like we're being left behind, and the transition is going to happen at some point. So why not just get it out of the way and we can all move on instead of just deferring the inevitable?
Don't want to sound boring, but Sunday, under Herrera, Stonewall penalty at Old Trafford, wasn't given. Obviously, me complaining. Yeah, I was complaining at that time because it was a penalty. But that's football. You're going to get some and some you're not. It's football. I respect the decision of the referee, rightly or wrongly, because he should have given it. All right, you're going to tell me if that was VAR, you would have given it, right? But that's the whole point of football. West Brom got away with it.
If you get relegated because of it, or you lose a final because of it, you will care.
38 games. There's going to be an incident during the season where they would have got a penalty that wasn't a penalty, or a corner that wasn't. There's so many incidents. It's like City. City won the league, not because United lost to West Brom, because City was so much better than everybody else.
Yeah, but if you sit through the whole season, if you sit in the whole season and you mark out, you know, who got what and what they didn't get, it doesn't work like that. It doesn't even itself out. That's a myth.
Rod, say again, Rod. What are you saying?
No, what's the other thing there? If someone gets relegated from someone giving the penalty when it's not a penalty, it doesn't swing the roundabout. That might be their only penalty of the season. United are going to get more penalty opportunities than someone like West Brom because they're going to be in more attacking. And so I don't agree with that. It's like Harry said, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. I was watching a rugby league game from 25 years ago, and they were doing it then 25 years ago, and we're still can't figure it out. It's not difficult to figure it out, and they seem to just make a mess out of it. And that's why, probably, the reason why there's no English referees going to the World Cup, because they've been terrible at it, and it's just controversy after controversy. When it can be really simple if done properly.
I'll be scared to leave a football pitch after the game, just in case he brings it back and gives a penalty.
Leave it there.
It's just ridiculous, that. It's absolutely ridiculous. Because even the rules tell you, if you've left the pitch, then you can't go back to it. So the ref's breaking his own rules. It's just grey areas. It's just pathetic.
Yeah, but is there a rule, though, Rod, about VAR in football?
Well, I was listening to the radio before, and he said, even though if they don't deal with the situation straight away, then they can't go back to it. He'd blow the whistle, and the players had walked off the pitch. They're halfway in the changing room. They can't actually go back to it. They know, come on, fellas, I'm in the state. It's coming, and I'll come out. It's against a lot of people. That's against the rules. You can't do that. So it's just, I don't think that the referees are clear enough how to do it, and it's just pathetic. It's just really pathetic how football, how massive amounts of money and a massive amount of top teams, top players, top, and just the referees are just shocking. But, absolutely shocking, and they can't get something simple like this.
Well, doesn't this indicate, though, that it doesn't really work in football?
Well, yeah, but people said 25 years ago that the back pass is, it's not going to work. It comes part of football. People don't like change, but we've got to change for the better of the game. Yes, it's going to be controversial. Some you're still going to get controversy in the VAR. You're still going to get it, but 95% you're going to get right and not wrong.
Right.
If done properly.
Okay. Let's agree to disagree on this one, because we're going to be going on all night about this. Longer than that half an hour that Harry spent on this show, which can be found on iTunes, SoundCloud, FNX Network, called Sofa Sports News.
See? And Acast.
And Acast, sorry.
So we're the biggest game in the world, yet we're prehistoric and we're behind the times where every other sport probably uses video evidence except us. Why?
I don't know.
With that, a stubborn of that pig-headed, oh, we're in a beautiful game, we can't spoil it, blah, blah. No, it's making the game better and getting decisions that poor referees are getting wrong. So why don't we use the video evidence? If the referees were better, 20 years ago, the referees were better and they were part-time. Now they're full-time, they're a load of pre-donners. Prima-donners, they're absolutely de-redding. Mike Reed, Atkinson, the list goes on. They're just full of clowns.
Michael Oliver.
Michael, I actually like Michael Oliver, but he's becoming worse as well.
You know,
he's not getting better, he's getting worse.
You know, his wife is a referee. She got death threats the other day. Someone put.
Yeah, that's just stupid. That's just silly. And, obviously people with too much time than I'm behind a keyboard.
Rod, I think you'll enjoy our pod this week.
Why did that against me about the AR?
Yeah, love it.
All right, okay. Yeah, well, see, you know what I mean? He was a top referee back in the day. He was a top referee. He didn't put up with no crap. They let the games flow. And it was all about the game. It wasn't about them. It was about the football game. These referees, it's all about them. They just do you ready. Just to like bully him, one of them right in the end.
You need to get Clattenburg back into the Premiership.
Mate, he's happy in Saudi Arabia. Leave him.
He's earning loads of money.
Clattenburg's a good referee, but he's another one that likes looking himself in the mirror. Just do your job. Howard Webby, now he's gone. There's not one good referee that can nail me out and say, yeah, he's brilliant. He's a good referee. And there's not one. And these are full-time referees. It's just poor.
I agree. Well, Clattenburg did tattoo the Champions League trophy on his wrist, didn't he, to say that he refereed the final. But it's hardly Anthony Joshua with the Team GB tattoo on his back. Anyway, let's talk about something else. Do you know what? I forgot to mention the second half of that game, the Mainz game, was actually delayed because home fans threw toilet rolls on the pitch.
It was a protest
because the game was being played on a Monday night, which we've seen before in Bundesliga, where they threw tennis balls on the pitch. So, yeah, imagine that happened out here. Right. Staying in the Bundesliga, and Schalke beat Fraudman 2-0. A game worth watching simply for Naldo's free kick, which is an absolute rocket. Now, Michy Batshuayi went off with an ankle injury and is actually out for the rest of the season, although he may make the World Cup. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Now, Harry, with the greatest respect to Michy, I'm really not sold on him, mate. It just seems like he's more of a social media cheerleader. He's more valuable from that perspective. I actually don't get the hype about him. What do you make of him?
I think he's been better since he's gone to Dortmund. He scored quite a few goals, had a decent time there. But I agree with you. He's a keyboard warrior sitting on Twitter all day. And perhaps if he spent half as much time on the training ground practicing his finishing, then, maybe he'd be a better striker. But I don't think Belgium would miss him, even if he didn't go to the World Cup, if I'm being honest. So, you know what? Not really got much to say on Batshuayi. I've never particularly rated him. Like I said, I think he's improved slightly since he's gone to Dortmund. But then again, he's playing in a weaker league. So I guess kind of evens itself out. But nothing really to add on that.
Divock Origi is scoring goals out there. So
he's not.
He's not?
No, he's not.
He scored a few. A few?
Have you seen Wolfsburg?
But a few. 37-year-old Mario Gomez is scoring goals out there.
Yeah, but he's always scored goals.
Mario Gomez is 37 years old. Luca Toni was like 40 years old when he was scoring.
Fighting, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, there you go. Right. Yes, Paris Saint-Germain, they secured their fifth league earned title in six seasons after thrashing Monaco 7-1.
That was a surprise, man.
We're supposed to, Jardim is going to be Arsenal's manager. While over in Serie A, Juventus went 6 points clear at the top with a 3-0 victory over Sampdoria. Now in La Liga, Barcelona set a new record as they extended their unbeaten run to 39 league matches and need 7 more points from 6 games to seal the title. Boring, boring, boring. But just when you thought there were no surprises in our European roundup, along came the Russians. You like? Third division side, the Mashuk KMV, used a grizzly bear by the name of Tim to open their game against Angus Nazran. I don't even know how to pronounce these teams. I'm sorry, Putin, do not kill me. Or just put anthrax through my letterbox or do all that chemical bollocks you've been doing to people, allegedly. Now,
why Tim's those door handles behind you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, he kind of knows the former Cypriot Prime Minister, so I think it will be all right for now. Now, Tim's party piece was actually to hand the match ball to an understandably nervous referee, something that has upset many animal rights activists. You can't do that to the bear. Maybe they gave him a kicking, yada, yada, yada. Perhaps, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Maybe the bear thinks he's Baloo from Jungle Book. I don't know. But, gents, we've all seen animals open games. Benfica and Palace use eagles. And if I remember correctly, Beşiktaş actually sacrificed the goat and put the blood on Les Ferdinand's head when they first signed him. Now, aside from the odd dog running on the pitch during a Sunday league game, should animals be anywhere near football? Should the foxes be changed to the dog and duck? Or should the swans be changed to the clipped wings? Or something. Rod, what do you make of this dancing bear? Because it was actually quite funny. I know people are going to get pissed off with me saying that, but it was actually funny. It was funny. It's funny.
It'd be funny just to eat so much.
Yes, true. Very true.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, whatever works is just this. Where's that? Russia?
Yeah, that's right, yep.
Yeah, well, say no more. There you go. I don't want to say anything anyway. Not the KGB banging my door.
Did they win?
I think they lost 3-0.
They didn't work, they didn't. Ban it.
Exactly.
Ban it.
So the bear was struggled, but he's done somewhere else next week.
I don't think the bear was actually tied up, though.
He's strung up by Hulk at the moment.
All right.
Gas. Maybe Russian, maybe gas.
Sent to Siberia, mate. That's the thing. And I think the... The match day announcer was actually saying that this bear's going to open up the World Cup as well, just to carry on.
Well,
it'd be a bit
too... Oh,
yeah,
strange, but, you know, it's Russia, there's lots of bears there, isn't there?
Harry, how about this? Why don't they, instead of using the octopus to predict who's going to win the World Cup, why don't they get every national team manager and just put them in a line and let the bear basically choose which one is going to win the World Cup by ripping the heads off every other manager? That could work, wouldn't it? That'd be even more entertaining than a World Cup, surely.
Yeah, that's true. You know what? I think so much is made of this World Cup in Russia. I don't think there's going to be any issues, to be honest. There's not going to be any problems with bears. There's not going to be any problems with the fans either, in my opinion. I think I've spoken to a few Arsenal fans that went over there for the CSKA game. And they couldn't speak highly enough of how they were welcomed and stuff. Look, we know, you know, there's some issues with Russia at the moment. We know there's some political tensions. But we also know that when the whole world is watching, they're not silly enough to do something sort of out of line. The whole animal thing, it's just people complaining for the sake of complaining. I mean, no harm came to the poor bear, did it?
Well, see, this is the thing. I mean, we don't know how the bear was brought up. Maybe he was born with humans. You just don't know this. Maybe he was a cub. Maybe the owner was hunting one day and he picked up the grizzly bear as a cub and raised it
to the match.
Like Goldilocks and the three bears. I mean, she was all right, wasn't she? She didn't get eaten up. She ate the porridge and they still let her sleep in the bed. Bedtime stories for your kids. Sorry. Anyway. Ah, I had to get that one off my chest because
feel better now.
Yeah, I don't know because I think the Russians get an unfair deal. Okay, fair enough. They, you know, we've heard about the homophobia, we've heard about, you know, the racism and whatnot. Okay, fine, but you can't be tarring them all with the same brush just because they've decided to get a Bears entertainment. I mean, for crying out loud, we've seen worse. And we, no disrespect, right? But we have this whole like feminism stuff. But Crystal Palace have cheerleaders, and no one says anything. But the Russians have. Yeah.
Now, have you ever been to Russia?
I've been. I went for the Champions League final in 2008.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think of it?
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing. I mean, when I saw huskies as stray dogs, and they were petrified of humans. Huskies are wolves. They're mountain dogs. They travel in packs and they eat people. And these dogs are petrified of us. Honestly, so you must. This is a surreal world. I'm seeing buildings that are war torn. Like a mate of mine was actually on a coach full of United fans, and he was at a set of traffic lights, and there was two Russian guys in the car, and they were banging the windows saying, you know, oh, Chelsea this, Chelsea that, and my mate was giving the V signs like, come on, this and that. The guy pulled out a gun. He pulled out a revolver. Like, and this isn't even a joke. Like. Honestly, they do not care. They honestly, you know, we was in Red Square, right? No word of a lie. It was me and a couple others. And at that time, I had the mohawk, believe it or not. I actually had hair back then. And I'm walking down Red Square, and these six Russian kids come towards us. And we're thinking, oh, here we go. There's going to be a bomb here. No. They wanted to take pictures because we were English hooligans. And they wanted photographs of us. This is unbelievable, but they're fascinated. The Russian fans are fascinated by English supporters. They're fascinated by English clubs. There's going to be a bit of trouble, you know. I could just imagine these Russian hooligans that, you know, dressed up as UFC fighters with, you know, those martial arts gloves and all that kind of stuff, traveling, sitting on bears as their transport is on horses. You know, it's not going to happen. I mean, we saw what happened in France. What was the Euros? It was in France, wasn't it?
Euros was in France.
I'll still be in Russia.
Sorry?
I won't want to get arrested in Russia.
No, see, this is another story. We flew to Estonia and then we got... Sorry, I'm boring you, Harry. We flew to Estonia. We flew to Estonia. We got a 16-hour train to Moscow. And as you're getting into Moscow, the army stopped the train. They got on. They checked everyone's passports. At the time, we had the Russian visa in our passport. And they took mine and Jan's passport. Well, not this Jan, another Jan. They took our passport away for 27 minutes. We timed it. We shit ourselves. We thought that we were going to turn into like Russian citizens. They're going to give us new passports and everything. But honestly, it is a surreal world. But it's a massive country. It's practically a continent in itself. Mm. So you just don't know what to expect. But I hear like St. Petersburg is nice. You know, certain parts of Moscow are nice. So, you know, you're going to get trouble because, you know, the ratio of good to bad is obviously higher out there. But if they've organized it in the way that I think they have and correctly, then you're not going to get as much trouble as what it seems. Like I said, it's going to be CSKA fans and Spartak fans, but they'll probably be fighting each other. That's just how it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be a disastrous World Cup. I just think it's more scaremongering from the media, really. What do you reckon, Harry? Do you think there's going to be any trouble?
Nah, I don't think there'll be any trouble. I remember, was it when Poland and Ukraine hosted the Euros together? And there was all these documentaries coming out beforehand about how bad it's going to be and how dangerous it is and how much racism there is out there. And we didn't see one single incident. It's just, that's the media for you, isn't it? They've got an agenda and you know, they try and make these places look bad and... At the end of the day, you know, stuff like that does go on in the world, unfortunately, but it goes on in loads of countries, not just Russia, not just Poland, not just the Ukraine. So, you know, I think they're obviously scrutinized because they're about to host a major tournament. But in my view, there's not going to be any issues. And if I was traveling out there as a fan, which I'm not, unfortunately, but if I was, I wouldn't be too concerned.
Put this way, I'm just going to end it on this note. In France, in most of Europe, the police have batons and pepper spray. In Russia, they have AK-47s. Let's just leave it at that. Say no more. Right, that's us for this week. I'm going to end the show on this note. Thank you guys for your time. Thanks, Harry, for joining us. Would you like to give your lovely podcasts, plural, a shout out?
Thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure. You can check us out at Sofa Sports Pod on Twitter and at Chronicles_AFC for the other one, for Chronicles of Aguna. So yeah, two podcasts at the moment. Check them out.
And you're writing a book, aren't you?
Yes, I am. With touch wood, everything goes well. It should be out in June. It's called The Chronicles of Aguna, and it's a look at this season from a fan's eyes, and a look at how social media has impacted Arsenal supporters and their views. We've got interviews in there with Ray Parler, Kevin Campbell, and Robbie from Arsenal Fan TV has contributed to it as well. So hopefully it makes interesting reading.
Fantastic.
Superb. Your Twitter handle?
Yannickus J.
Rod?
Rod James Giggs.
Do you want to remind our listeners what they have to do?
I think Yann should do it.
What should our listeners do?
What should,
there you go. Is it like, subscribe?
Yeah, well done. Yeah, like our YouTube channel.
A bit more enthusiastic next time, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, put my.
I was trying to think how you word it, and I couldn't.
Rod has upped his game. Rod has upped his game. You've gone down 2 or 3 pegs. I don't know what's wrong with you. Maybe you don't have enough sugar in your diet anymore. I've got 2 chocolate bars there. And they're sat there like.
I'm not on the diet.
I don't care. Like some.
I'm more worried about having stupid hair. Silly haircut.
It's not stupid. No, I've gone natural today. Look.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll be okay.
Yeah.
Ravinelli. Right, like and subscribe our YouTube channel. We're on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Shooting Friends. We have a Facebook group page. Get involved because everyone else is battering each other on it. Until next time, take it easy, ladies and gentlemen.